Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to At the Movies, the penultimate episode of season 3, independent features season.
Mm-hmm.
And boy, has it been a wild ride these past few weeks. We are working on scheduling a guest. Not putting them on blast or anything. We appreciate them very much coming on the show. They're a busy individual, and it's going to be a good episode. And it should be next week. So this week, we decided to watch...
you want
to
say it at the same time?
Yes.
All right. We watched...
One, two, three.
Donnie Brasco, the 1997 film Donnie Brasco.
I watched Debbie Does Dallas.
Oh.
I got my D's all mixed up. But, okay, all right, hold on, stop. Have you seen Donnie Darko, though?
I have seen Donnie Darko, yeah.
Can we talk about that since we both watched the wrong movie?
Yeah, we can watch it.
Let's talk about Donnie Darko, then. That works. Hello.
Mo.
How you doing? Let's take a minute to catch up. How you doing?
I'm doing good, man. The Steelers won today, so shout out to all my Steelers fans, all my Pittsburgh people out there. We did it, but let's see if we can continue to do it. But this isn't a sports podcast, and most people that listen to our podcast don't give a shit about sports.
I just shut it off. I'm listening to this like a week from now, and I just turned it off because I got mad.
You're like, football, no. Why the bald man talk about foosball?
I listened to your episode of What the Film Corps last night.
Oh, nice.
And it was wonderful. It was a great episode. Everyone should go over and check that out. Lo was a guest and covered Reminiscence, the new Wolverine joint.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. I was like, oh, the sequel to Logan.
Hugh Jackman. And you guys had some very, I have not seen the film. I probably won't after listening to the podcast, not because for any reason other than the movie sounded like maybe it was okay, but maybe a waste of 2+ hours.
Yeah, I don't think you really need to do it. Yeah, shout out to the What the Film Corps guys. I mean, if you guys haven't checked them out yet, they're available on YouTube, on the Film Corps Digital, and also audio as well, just like us. So they're our friends. So make sure you go show them some love, just like they've shown us.
I do have to address, we met with James on, it was yesterday, I think, Saturday, and I said, I was so excited, because James likes superhero movies, and I said, hi, I just watched Spider-Man and Spider-Man 2 last night, and he said, why? And I saw red. My heart was broken, because I absolutely loved revisiting both of those movies so much. I personally enjoyed them much more than most Marvel movies these days, which is probably not a normal take or probably not James's perspective. And he is definitely the expert to listen to on stuff like that because he follows it a lot more than I do. But I was like, I just want you to be proud of me, Dad. I liked the Spider-Man movie.
You guys disagree on so much when it comes to movies, and it is hilarious. Yeah. To me.
Yep. So that is I told him, get me on What the Film Corps for a special Tobey Maguire Spider-Man retrospective, and I'll tell you exactly why I love those films.
And keep me off of it.
All right, let's talk about this week's movie. It is not an independent feature in the sense that our other movies have been one. It is an independent independent feature in the sense that it almost didn't get made.
Yeah, but it was the wonderful person that she is, Drew Barrymore, swept in like an angel from above and funded the film.
Which is awesome, and she's great in the film. Donnie Darko's a 2001 psychological thriller?
Yeah.
I guess I would probably call it. This is a movie I grew up with, and I know that you, when I brought it up to you, I think that you said that this was also something that you had seen a few times, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think this is probably, I'm just going to say safely, I think this might have been my fourth watch. I mean, it's probably higher than that, but I think it's probably my fourth time watching it. And spoilers, everybody. We all know how I get when I rewatch a movie from my childhood. We've seen it over and over again. This one didn't do it. We finally broke it. We broke the trend.
Broke the curse.
We broke the curse.
And you, it's funny too, because you were watching it, and we've been doing it different. Usually we watch the movies together, which we will do again too if people join the Discord. But lately we've been watching them apart, and I do think it's kind of interesting to not know how you're going to react to something before we talk about it. So maybe we'll start doing, like, maybe we'll watch one movie together a week, and then the other one maybe we'll keep it a surprise or something. But it's funny, because I told you I had strong feelings. I was nervous. This whole thing came back into my life because my friend Ted Hallowell from the No Hugging, No Learning Seinfeld podcast. Shout out to our other friends.
Which I just actually listened to. I listened to a couple episodes. I really enjoyed it.
There you go.
I'm not a big Seinfeld. Great pod. I'm not a big Seinfeld fan, but I listened to it.
Great people, great pod. Tim and Ted are excellent. Definitely give it a listen. He is moving to Texas, and I don't even know how it came up, but I said something about, you know, I don't know where my DVD copy of Donnie Darko went. And he said, I have two Blu-ray copies if you want one. And not only was it a Blu-ray copy, he gave me a copy of the director's cut, which I'd never seen. And was prepared to watch, and then the Blu-ray froze. So instead, I watched the free version on YouTube, which is not the free with ads YouTube movie. It is a channel called Film Rise. It has uploaded the film in full. Go watch that. It's great. I mean, it's a great opportunity. It's a great movie to have there for free. And so I sat down and I watched this, and I told you that I had strong feelings upon rewatch, and you messaged me and said, what were your strong feelings? So I started to get nervous. Mm-hmm. I was like, I gotta be honest, bud.
Which is one of my favorite things to do, even though that it's kind of a shitty thing, because I know that Aaron has, like, you know, pretty decent levels of anxiety, but one of my favorite things is to kind of, like,
at all times
is to kind of, like,
we love it,
is to get him a little, like, worried,
riled up.
I don't know why, you know, sometimes I just like to watch world burn, but I was like strong feelings, what are your strong feelings, like I was trying to give the impression, like, I was like, this movie's ass.
Yeah, I told you that it was another 5-star film for Mo, and you were like, how could you be so fucking
and I just
loved, right? Well, and I'm so glad we both loved this movie.
It was, like, funny though too, because I was like, how can you be so effing, and at the same time you were like, right, and I was like, so right. At the same time we said it, and I was like, oh, that's good.
I was also nervous. I haven't seen this probably, it's been since at least college. In fact, you know what? I think I can remember the last time I watched it, and I think it was like 2013. So that would be 8 years ago.
Yeah.
The movie's burned into my brain, though. Like, I had watched this enough as a teenager that I remembered so many moments and quotes from it as I was watching it. And I was nervous, but boy, not only it was nostalgic.
Yeah.
So it was good vibes for me, but it was also held up, in my opinion.
I will say though, at about, I think 10 to 15 minutes in, I was like, this movie is going to Starship Trooper me. I was like, I was so mad. I was like,
nervous.
I was like, oh my God, I'm going to hate this film. And I had like an existential crisis. I was like, I'm going to hate this film. And I loved it. I'm like, I'm going to hate it. And then as soon as I sent you the text, I was like, oh yeah, this movie's like a music video. I was like, I'm in it. Here we go.
What was putting you off at first?
No, it was like I think it was like the dialogue and the way it was like moving along at the beginning. And then like, as soon as it hit that like number or like, it was like those 80s music, like, thing, I was like, all right, here I am. I'm in it. I'm back. I love it. So
it's going to be our most explicit episode. Tell me, Lo, how exactly does one suck a fuck? Oh boy. I have an interesting quote that I'd like to read. This is not a case for, it depends on how you feel about Kevin Smith. Lo and I are fans. We've talked about this before. We covered Clerks this season.
Mm-hmm.
Some people do not like Kevin Smith, so this is not exactly a ring.
Which I find weird. Which I find weird. I didn't realize that was a thing. I thought he was like the lovable independent filmmaker, but I could see why.
I see it like kind of the same way I see Seth Rogen and Judd Apatow stuff now, where it's like once it's around for like, you know, 15 years, and there's been so many movies put out that follow that filmmaker's formula, it starts to get a little tired, I think.
Yeah, it kind of gets a little dusty, and it's like, you're like, eh.
Yeah, and for you and I, because we like the filmmaker, it's enjoyable, and we can, like, see that it's dusty, but we're still like, oh, this is comforting, you know? For some people, maybe not. But this was interesting because I was reading about Richard Kelly. I have not actually seen... I think I saw The Box at one point and thought it was not very good. But I don't think I've seen any other movies he's directed. So I was just reading about him, and I did have major anxiety when I read that he was 26 when he wrote and directed this, because that's how old I am.
But also there's people that we've talked about on this episode that were 35 when they wrote and directed their first film. So
yes, and so this is interesting because we talked about Tenet last week on After the Movies, and so here's a quote from his Wikipedia page. In 2016, filmmaker Kevin Smith said of Richard Kelly, is insanely creative and not unlike Christopher Nolan. But Nolan wound up in the Warner Bros. System where he got special handling, and he got a lot of money to make huge art films like Inception. Not sure I'd call that an art film, but I know what he's going for. Richard can be one of our greatest filmmakers. He is right now, but just a lot of people don't realize it. He's still a kid, and someone needs to Nolan that kid.
But it kind of sucks, though, man, because, like, what happened to him? Where'd he go after 2010?
I'll tell you what. Yeah, Southland Tales in 2006. I know that movie is divisive and has a cult following, and I've never seen it, so I'd like to watch it. Again, I mentioned The Box, but it does seem as though after... And that's The Box is the last thing that he wrote and directed. It looks like he's working on a Rod Serling biopic, which sounds awesome to me. That sounds right up my alley. But... doesn't look like he's been doing much. I'm reading right now that he talked about doing a sequel to Donnie Darko in 2017, potentially. There is a sequel called S. Darko that he was not involved with, and it was awful. But I digress. Let's talk about the movie.
Oh, wait, hang on. I think I just found something. Oh, no, this is... I just saw James Gandolfini in this Wikipedia, and his, like, Wikipedia, and I was like, what?
I didn't know if you were getting ready to do a bit or not. I was like, let's...
No, he was going to...
I found something.
He was going to do a true crime thriller with Gandolfini, but it went unmade because when he passed away in 2013. Wow.
That sucks. I would have loved to have seen that. What a pairing.
Crazy.
I think that this, for being 26 years old, this is the third film he worked on, first notable film that he worked on. I really think the writing and direction first. Looking at this movie, it's almost like I have to look at it like a cake with layers from the ground up. So, like, the writing and the directing is part of why it works. It's brilliant. I mean, it's really, truly original. And, like, there are movies that we've watched that kind of do the time travel thing. There's movies that we've watched that have, again, Christopher Nolan, look at Interstellar. My biggest complaint about that movie was, like, the science versus emotion aspects of it didn't line up for me. This is a movie that does that, and I think it works. Because I think it's like, the way that I described it in my Letterboxd review was, at the heart of the movie, it's about free will and destiny. Then you dress that up as time travel, and it's all surrounding the feelings that you go through and the stages you go through when you're, like, coming of age, becoming an adult. So you've got an emotional core, then you've got kind of this combination of science and religion. And I think that the film is purposely left open for interpretation.
Do you think it's a coming of age film? Do you think it's intended as a coming of age film? You know what I'm talking about, right? Like, there's films that are, like, very clearly... are like coming of age films. Like, do you think that this one was, or do you think that maybe it just gets flack for being it? Well, let me start. I don't think it is.
No.
I don't. Okay. Yeah, I don't feel that way.
What makes you interesting? Because I would say yes. My reasoning would be I don't. So much of the film is, central to the film. So much of it is the fact that we are dealing with teenagers that are in high school and that are going through growing pains, especially Donnie Darko's like mental illness.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That for me. And I see the whole thing, too, as being this metaphor of, like, feeling like the weight of the world is on your shoulders as a teenager and feeling like you have to make the pressure to make the right decisions. I would be definitely curious to hear what separates it from other coming-of-age films for you.
I just think, personally, I think of, like, when I think of a coming-of-age film, I think that's its central plot point is, like, the main character. Like, watching them grow throughout the film. And
yeah.
I don't think we saw Donnie really grow that much throughout the film like you would see in a coming of age film. And two, I think the plot has more meat and substance to it with everything else that's going on in this world that
yeah.
I think it focuses more on that. So I don't think it is like a coming of age film. While it is, but it's like, I don't think it's its main focus, I guess is what I'm saying.
For sure. And that's a totally valid take. I mean, this is a movie again. What do you compare it to? It's a coming of age film, a time travel film, a philosophy film.
Yep.
You know, set in the '80s. The some of the aesthetics about it too. Like, there's so much about this that works for me. The setting of suburbia, the music, all of the '80s music, which I guess the director's cut changes to an INXS song.
Oh,
but,
okay.
At the beginning, him riding his bike home with that The Killing Moon by Echo and the Bunnymen playing. It's such a like 80s new wave post-punk like Halloween-y type feeling. You know, it really feels like a Halloween movie and it takes place on Halloween, so it makes sense. But like later on, there's Joy Division, Love Will Tear Us Apart. There's all these really good songs scattered throughout the film. Yep. And I think the original score as well is very good.
I gotta watch the director's cut. I feel like I gotta give that a watch.
You know what makes it really interesting to me is I feel like most director's cuts are not substantially different that a normal viewer would notice.
I'd agree with
that. It's 20 minutes longer.
Really? It's not
director's cut.
It's not 2 hours longer?
It is not the Richard Kelly release the Richard Kelly cut. It is 20 minutes longer, which is the right amount of longer for a director's cut.
Yep.
In my opinion. And looking at this, how this builds from the bottom up. And then at the end, I do want to talk about like interpretations of this a little bit, but the casting is perfect. Jake Gyllenhaal and Jenna Malone are absolutely perfect in those roles. As is Patrick Swayze's role is so it's
Swayze.
Weird to make light of it because he does end up being a child pornographer, but he is. He's funny in this movie. He's very goofy, you know.
Yeah, it's kind of weird seeing Swayze in a role like that.
As this kind of like villain that is not even really central to the movie, like he's almost like a side character. It's fascinating. Lines that I remembered from this movie and scenes. My favorite line is, "He told me to forcibly insert the lifeline exercise card into my anus."
I think anytime where Donnie has like outburst or just wants to fight with authority were my favorite parts of this movie like growing up.
Oh,
like anytime where he's like
when he says I think you're the fucking antichrist,
yeah, and he's like no,
an all-timer,
because he's spot on with his observations. Like he's not wrong, he's not like some entitled kid. He's like, he sees the world, he processed it, and he goes, nah, this is effed up, I'm not. And he just goes out and he tells it how it is. And I absolutely love it. And it's funny too, like the scene that you're talking about when they're talking to him in the office and his dad is just like, and he's like walking out laughing.
Yep.
And the mom is like, so left good. Him like want to like, discipline Donnie kind of, but then ultimately the teacher goes, well, I just don't think that you're fit to be the dance mom.
That teacher is so good in her role. Sometimes I seriously doubt your commitment to Sparkle Motion.
When she's at the door after trying to be like, I'm fighting, I'm going to do a defense for him. And it's like, why are you defending this man?
Oh, and the irony too, I don't know if it's supposed to be seen this way, but I remember even in high school thinking this was like a clear decision to make. It's like, you know, she's so righteous, and then she's also the person that's like immediately defending this pedophile. And then when it shows their dance company, and I don't know what the world of children's dance looks like or anything, but even as like in high school, I remember watching this movie and being like, the dance is like kind of weirdly suggestive, like some of the moves that the kids are doing. And so it's, to me, I was like, oh, they're trying to show how hypocritical it is, you know, of this woman who has all of these super, you know, she rides her high horse everywhere, and she's basically peddling this you know, sexualization of children, both through the dance company does and also through Patrick Swayze being this guy that she goes to bat for. It's then, and that's where stuff, you know, what's interesting about Donnie as a character, I think, is that I wouldn't call him an anti-hero by any means, but I also would say that he's not a character I like, you know, he's likable, but I would say that he is neither like a hero or an anti-hero. He is just somebody who is, and this may be also because of his mental issues that he's dealing with in the film, but Jake Gyllenhaal does a really good job of showing this. He just takes information and just interprets it.
Yeah.
Like, he just sees it through his worldview. There's no real moral thought to whether what he's doing is right or wrong.
Mm-hmm.
He acts on his own kind of beliefs and system, as opposed to following anyone else's, you know, system, which is again also like part of it, because you see they're the whole time they're trying to shove down their throats the fear and love thing. You know, there's only two spectrums of emotion, fear and love, and he very accurately says, like, what are you talking about? There's like 1,000 different emotions in there. There's anger, there's, you know, all of this stuff. Where do you put that?
Yeah, I think it's crazy too, because like they were so quick to, and obviously it's because like I think they got to put on the perception that they've known Donnie for years at this point, so they're used to these outbursts, but they were so quick to just be like, Donnie, you're wrong, or Donnie, that's not right. Like, anytime he would try to like speak up, like, it was just so like, no, Donnie, no, Donnie. And like, I get it, at this point in his teens, they're probably like used to this, but I'm just like, man, just let the boy speak.
Yeah, for sure. About his friends are assholes in this.
Oh yeah, his friends are real bad people.
Yeah, they're racist, sexist high school teenagers.
All of the strikes. All of the strikes. All the strikes.
One of my favorite scenes, probably of all time ever, is them shooting the gun and talking about the Smurfs and why Smurfette was created and
who Gargamel Smurfette fucks. Gargamel created Smurfette as a spy. I was like,
let me see if I can find his exact quote.
Yeah, I mean, that whole like dialogue while they're shooting the guns is crazy, because like one is like sexualizing the Smurfs and Donnie wants nothing to do with it. Donnie wants the Smurfs to remain as like wholesome as they possibly can, but his other friend there is like just trying his hardest to make it like a porn thing.
Yeah, it's just, well, it's, and it's very funny because it's he, again, it's like a logic thing. Like, he turns around so intent on correcting his friend, and I have the quote here. He says, first of all, Papa Smurf didn't create Smurfette. Gargamel did. She was sent in as Gargamel's evil spy with the intention of destroying the Smurf village, but the overwhelming goodness of Smurf way of life transformed her. And as for the whole gangbang scenario, it just couldn't happen. Smurfs are asexual. They don't even have reproductive organs under those little white pants. That's what's so illogical, you know, about being a Smurf. What's the point of living if you don't have a dick? It's very, it's almost like something pulled out of a Judd Apatow movie, like the way that those characters would talk, but it feels way more realistic coming out of a teenager's mouth, you know, the way a teenager would think. Speaking of Judd Apatow, how about Seth Rogen in this movie?
I didn't know. Wait, what?
is the bully.
Oh, shit.
It's one of the bullies.
I forget about that every time.
Let me see if it's actually his first film role, because, you know, I know he was in Freaks and Geeks and some TV series and stuff. And this predates Anchorman, where he played a cameraman.
You're right. I forget about that every time.
So weird, because he's, you know, so young and his hair is short and he doesn't have any facial hair. Didn't your dad, like, kill your mom?
I saw Seth Rogen one time in the hotel that I used to work for. They were filming guerrilla filming a scene, and they came into the hotel. It was like the pickle guy, and they were just chanting, and I was like, what is going on? And they're just like holding Seth Rogen up in like these old like 19 like
oh my god
30s like clothing, and I was like, what is happening?
That was for the Pickle movie.
Yeah.
Have you seen the Pickle movie?
I have not seen the Pickle movie.
I have not seen the Pickle movie either. I'd be curious. This is his first film. His first film role. Ricky Danforth is his name. Sometimes it's funny to just look at obscure character names. Yeah. So, I want to know, this is like, and again, all right, this is coming from two guys that saw this movie growing up. The movie does get some flack from people in terms of being a angsty teen boy movie, which I think is silly, because I think it's way more than that. But I also think that it is somehow accurate, in the sense that I think a lot of like teenage men connect with it for a pretty clear reason. And I think a lot of it is this idea of like being troubled, and also this idea that you somehow make the right decisions and do the right thing, mm-hmm. And be, you know, a hero for people in a way. So for me, I don't think this movie's that hard to follow. I mean, there's some questions, certainly, but for me, I think the time travel thing is kind of almost like a red herring. I think it's less about time travel, and it's more about religion or philosophy, however you want to look at it, but like free will and destiny, you know?
I would say the one big thing, like the reason why I think that people think it's hard to follow is because the harder you think about this movie, the further you're getting away from the true intentions of this film. The more that you try to put in like different theories and you're thinking this and that, the more that you add to this movie, you are setting yourself further and further away from what it's just truly trying to be. You know, like you were saying, so.
Well, it reminded me of, it's just funny, it keeps coming up. Tenet, that line about, you just have to feel it. You have to, you know, you can't, I could try to explain this to you all day, but you just have to feel it. It's kind of like I said about Malignant, it's you buy, or that'll be coming out Thursday, but buy a ticket for the ride, and you take the ride.
Yep.
And sometimes it works for you, sometimes it doesn't. And for me, this one just works for me. The emotions are valid and feel very real to me. The things that Donnie is going through, and, you know, teenage heartbreak and love and, all these different things. The whole choosing to die thing in itself is just very fascinating. The sacrifice, you know.
I think all in all, it still sits at probably in one of my top films that I like. I think if I were to sit down, it's probably in the top 20, I'd say. Maybe top 25.
Yeah, this would be my top 10, I think. This is, like I said, it's a rare five-star film for Mo, which is seeming less and less rare these days, because I think I gave Clerks 5 stars as well. I just don't. It's so good, and nothing else I know. There are plenty of movies that try to tackle philosophy and like science in a way that they kind of intersect. Mm-hmm. It's very hard to do that, I think, and to wrap emotion into it and have it all feel genuine, and not have, you know, people frustrated with the questions they have after the movie.
No, and I think it did a good job too, like explaining it to you too, where like, it didn't make you, it like, it explained what was going on, the conversations between him and the teacher about time travel and stuff. That was really the director and the writers, like, that was them telling you kind of what's going on without showing you. And usually that doesn't work, but I kind of liked it in this one.
That's what I love about this, is like, there are different ways you could look at it, because he presents it as a scientific, you know, he talks about the wormhole and all these things. Donnie gives him an alternate decision that, or an alternate conversation that he's not able, I'm afraid I won't be able to continue this conversation. But he says, he refers to it as God's channel. Starts to talk about it in terms of like, what if God was showing you like your path, the thing that you were meant to do. And so it is this idea of, you can look at it as, you know, Donnie, you can look at it as a time travel thing or a scientific thing, where Donnie goes back to the right place at the right time and makes the decision to save. Oh, what is her name in this movie? Save Jenna Malone's character. Or you can look at it as...
It's Gretchen.
Gretchen, yes. Or you can look at it as God or someone showing him, you know, what the different outcomes of what happens if he decides to either stay in bed or get out of bed. And I prescribe to the, or I subscribe to the second interpretation. I'm just rambling at this point. I love this movie. Love this movie.
Yeah, man. I mean, it was good. I'm glad that we ended up watching it. I'm glad that we ended up watching it. I'm glad that, I know that our viewers, I'm pretty sure a lot of them have watched this film, so I'm interested to see what they have to say. Leave us a review. Let us know your thoughts on this film. We'll read it on the next one. Let us know in the YouTube comments, if you watch the video, what you think of Donnie Darko. Do you think it's hard to follow? Do you think it's an angsty teenage film? Let us know. Let us know.
I would like to thank our Patreon members, as well as anyone who stuck around long enough to listen to the episode. Thank you so much, Jay Irvin and Dylan Painter. If you'd like to join them, you can check out our Patreon. As low as $3 a month will get you access to the Discord, as well as all kinds of bonus content, videos, photos, things like that. We're coming up on season 2 of The Lomo Show, which will be premiering this Friday. We got some great stuff lined up for October. We'll be filming this coming weekend, so stay tuned for that. If you want to help the show out, tell a friend. Sharing is a free way to help us out, and the best thing you could do is leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. That would be extremely, extremely helpful, and it costs no money. So
zero monies.
I think that's it. I think that's all I got. Next week we are going to be watching something that I actually haven't even looked at yet. I'm not sure exactly what we're watching, but we are watching a film with a filmmaker that is somewhat local to both of us in Erie and Pittsburgh, and we are going to be interviewing them on the show, so tune in for that, and we will also be ranking the films from the season. I know that our guest has seen some of them, if not all of them. They are definitely a cinephile, so hopefully they will have some interesting takes for us as well. So
yeah, that's all I have. Nothing left for
me. That's all I got. All right, tune in next week for our season finale. We will be sharing some kind of link for you to prepare for the episode next week. And then after the movies on Thursday, you can look forward to us ranking our top and bottom 5 after the movies film so far. And then we'll probably take a little break and come back with two new directors.
Come right back. All right, everybody. We'll see you soon.
Bye.